The headlines this hour. Iran dismisses a draft resolution against it submitted by the United States and three European countries to the International Atomic Energy Agency. The NATO Secretary General says there is no indication that the missile that struck Poland's territory was the result of a deliberate attack. The World Trade Organization warns of a risk of several key economies sliding into a recession, just as the inflation rate in the UK sets another record. It's 6:30 p.m. in Iran's capital, Tehran. This is news. Thanks for joining us. The head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization has rejected a draft resolution set forth by the U.S., Britain, Germany, and France to the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. Mohammad Islami says the four countries that presented the documents that they themselves know are not true. Islami says the allegations that there had been no progress in the IAEA's long-standing probe in Iran are aimed at slandering the country. Islami underlined that Iran has been working within the UN nuclear agency's legal framework. He said that adopting a policy of maximum pressure campaign is born out of the West's addiction to sanctions. The draft resolution comes against the backdrop of stalled talks on reviving the 2015 Iran deal, known as a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has falsely claimed that Iran was planning to issue mass death sentences for protesters. In a tweet that went viral on social media, Trudeau claimed that Iran is going to sentence 15,000 protesters to death. The tweet was deleted after 12 hours. Canadian officials said the post had been based on initial reporting that was incomplete and lacked necessary context. Last month, Ottawa sanctioned a number of Iranian individuals and entities over what it called a crackdown on protests that broke out in mid-September. But Iran argues that the riots have been stirred by foreign-backed elements. The European Union has imposed fresh sanctions on Iran over its response to the recent riots in the country. The bloc has targeted a number of individuals and entities over what it called Tehran's widespread use of force against peaceful protesters. The Iranian 24-hour English news channel Press TV is also blacklisted.
The European Union announced new sanctions on Iran. The bloc has blacklisted 29 officials and three organizations over what it called Tehran's widespread use of force against peaceful protesters. The sanctions include travel bans and asset freezes. Interior Minister Ahmad Vahidi, as well as several military and police officials, are on the sanctions list. In reaction to the sanctions, Iran's foreign ministry denounced the move as baseless, illegal, and meddlesome, stating that Tehran reserves the right to retaliate in kind. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said that addiction to sanctions has deprived European parties of rationality and tactfulness, warning that Europe itself is tightening the noose on its foreign relations by such a wrong-headed approach. One of the three blacklisted entities by the EU is Iran's Press TV news channel. The 29-member blog has accused the news channel of airing forced confessions of detainees during recent riots. Press TV's management has vehemently rejected the allegation, saying the news channel has made a great effort to counter fake narratives fostered by Western media. Press TV's CEO reacted to the blacklisting by calling it a failed offensive against Iran. In a tweet, he said Press TV gets sanctioned by EU because it tried to show there was no such thing as peaceful protests, but violent riots orchestrated by the West. The sanctions prove the offensive against Iran has failed miserably. Experts believe that the sanctions imposed on Press TV by the EU and earlier by the government of Canada are aimed at muzzling free speech and alternative views. They have also highlighted that human rights violations has turned into a tool for Western countries to advance their agenda, as street riots in Iran don't seem to be achieving the goals they expected. The EU had earlier imposed sanctions on 15 Iranian individuals and entities linked to Mahsa Amini's death. The move drew Tehran's strong condemnation. Iran denounced the blacklisting as futile and based on false allegations. Iran also announced tit-for-tat sanctions against institutions and individuals in the European Union last month due to their deliberate actions in support of terrorism and terrorist groups.
Press TV was established in 2007 to provide an alternative view and cover stories that are normally neglected by the mainstream Western media. However, the EU sanctions against Press TV are not unprecedented. Since its establishment, the news channel has been targeted by the West several times.
The EU has blacklisted Press TV, but this is not the first time Press TV has been targeted by the West. Facebook and YouTube have taken down Press TV's pages several times while the US shut down the website of the news channel. The news network has also been removed from TV broadcasting satellites in Europe, North America, and East Asia, largely due to the pressure from the US and some of its allies. But why? Press TV first went on air in 2007 as Iran's only English language news network. It works based on the motto of the Voice of the Voiceless and tries to cover stories that mainstream media usually boycott or underreport. A case point is the Israel-Palestine issue. Many experts say such moves are against freedom of expression. But isn't freedom of expression one of the pillars of the West's so-called democracy, or is it just a sham phrase to be used whenever it suits them? Press TV has long been used to face hurdles in its efforts to give a voice to the voiceless. All these obstructions only make one wonder if the declaration of support for free speech is anything more than a slogan.
The 9th Joint Economic Commission of Iran-Venezuela has wrapped up after 3 days in Tehran. Officials from both countries signed MOUs that paved the way for stronger business relations between Tehran and Caracas. Yusumi Shahmedi has more.
3 days of intense negotiations at the 9th Economic Commission has led to several agreements that can be considered a turning point in Iran-Venezuela relations. As a result, cooperation will expand in the fields of industry, mining, energy, trade, agriculture, and science and technology.
During the 9th Joint Economic Commission, we discussed ways to implement the previous agreements and facilitate trade between the two countries. One particular area of interest is agriculture, given Venezuela's great potential with over 30 million hectares of arable land.
Venezuelan agricultural products will be exported to Iran, while the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela will allocate some 500,000 hectares of agricultural land to the Islamic Republic for the public and private sector to make investments in this field.
Iran has also agreed to export more than 100,000 cars to Venezuela in a period of 5 years and to share the technology of its knowledge-based products.
We have already established air routes, but maritime transport can play a crucial role, allowing trade between the two countries to grow even stronger.
The Joint Commission has taken major steps in expanding bilateral ties based on the 20-year cooperation roadmap signed during the visit by President Nicolas Maduro to Tehran in June 2022. The 10th Joint Commission has been scheduled to take place in 6 months in Venezuela, where both sides will analyze the results of the session.
The cooperation agreement signed at the end of the three-day economic commission will allow the expansion of bilateral ties between Iran and Venezuela to a new level. Yusumi Shahmadi, Press TV, Tehran.
The Ukrainian capital Kiev and its surrounding areas are awaiting a difficult situation as recent Russian strikes have caused serious damage to the country's power grid amid dropping temperatures. The governor of Kiev says that the region will face power outages in the coming days. That will exacerbate the situation as weather is expected to get colder next week. Oleksiy Kuleba announced Russia for targeting energy infrastructure, but he assured the residents that repairs are underway and that the people would definitely survive these difficult times. His remarks came one day after Russia fired a barrage of missiles on several Ukrainian cities, including Kiev, causing widespread power outages and shutdowns. The NATO Secretary General says there is no indication of a deliberate attack on Poland after a projectile landing in one of its villages near the border with Ukraine left 2 people dead.
Investigation into this incident is ongoing, and we need to await its outcome. But we have no indication that this was the result of a deliberate attack. And we have no indication that Russia is preparing offensive military actions against NATO.
After meeting with the military alliance's ambassadors, Stoltenberg said the preliminary analysis suggests that it was likely caused by Ukrainian missiles launched to intercept the Russian attack. The Ukrainian president, however, was quick to put the blame on Kremlin, saying that the blast was an attempt by Moscow to spread terror. The Polish president, who earlier echoed with the view of Kiev, ruled out an attack by Moscow in a fresh address to the National Security Council.
It was probably an S-300 rocket made in the Soviet Union, an old rocket, and there is no evidence that it was launched by the Russian side. It is highly probable that it was fired by Ukrainian anti-aircraft defense and unfortunately fell on our territory.
Also earlier, U.S. President Joe Biden said the projectile was unlikely to have been fired by Moscow itself, ruling out Russia's involvement in the incident. Meanwhile, a statement by the Russian Defense Ministry says that images from the wreckage show fragments of Ukraine's anti-aircraft missiles. The ministry says Moscow's nearest strike on Ukraine has been 35 kilometers from the Polish border. We reached out to historian and author Marcus Papadopoulos to get his thoughts on Ukraine's hasty reaction to the missile strike in Poland.
It is very important to note that had the missile been a Russian one, Article 5 of the NATO Charter would not have been invoked, because Article 5 does not provide for a missile entering the airspace of a NATO member state unintentionally. Therefore, had the missile have been a Russian one, it would have been unintentionally fired into Polish airspace. The Americans, who are the de facto leader of NATO, would know that. We must be abundantly clear that America and Russia enjoy numerous channels of communication with one another to ensure that a nuclear war between the two superpowers never erupts. And I have absolute faith in the Americans that when it comes to working with their Russian colleagues to prevent a nuclear war between themselves erupting, that they will do so. The Americans and the Russians will not allow anyone or any country in the world to incite a war between themselves. Now that takes me on to my last submission. Whilst it is irrefutably the case that Zelensky is an American and British puppet, nevertheless, it can be argued that perhaps Washington and London are starting to lose some control over Zelensky, because even before an investigation was launched last night to ascertain the origin of the missile which landed in Poland, Zelensky was calling for NATO to take military action against the Russian Federation.
New defense ministers agreed to increase military spending by 70 billion euros during the next 3 years. The decision has drawn criticism because EU citizens are enduring a growing social crisis. Jerome Hughes has more from Brussels.
In just the past 9 months, the EU and US have together pumped 32 billion euro worth of lethal weapons into Ukraine. At a meeting here in Brussels on Tuesday, EU defence ministers agreed to increase their military spending by a huge amount between now and the end of 2025.
70 billion euros.
Apparently, there is an urgent need to replace weapons being sent to Ukraine.
The supply of arms to Ukraine, it's a continuous flow. It flows every day. And every day there is a member state who provides more. The system has already been provided. I don't think we need new systems. What they need is ammunition to make the systems work.
One expert we interviewed online told us it is a dangerous policy.
The problem with further funding is that it suggests further escalation. An escalation is hazardous because by intent or by miscalculation, it can lead all of the parties into a nuclear conflict.
Many peace activists and rights groups say the military spending is grotesque given the EU's growing social crisis. those in the European Parliament who oppose NATO and are calling for peace talks between Russia and Ukraine are furious at attempts to silence them.
We talk about democracy, but where is this going to end up? Those you brand as populist and anti-European have a democratic right to disagree with you on the course that Europe is taking.
Defence ministers have agreed to establish camps in up to 20 EU nations that will be used to train Ukrainian soldiers. Some security analysts are suggesting long-standing, controversial ambitions to create an EU army within the EU have effectively been put on hold. And now the strategy is to create an EU army in Ukraine. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The World Trade Organization is raising the alarm about several major economies heading into a recession.
It may not happen everywhere, but I think that in several key countries, we risk, sliding into a recession. And of course, the impact of that can be quite significant, even for emerging markets and poor countries.
Speaking on the sidelines of the G20 summit, Awiala also said that the war in Ukraine, the cost of living crisis, and soaring inflation are among the uncertainties that cloud the prospect of a global recovery. Last month, the organization projected global trade to rise just 1% in 2023, down sharply from a 3.5% forecast for this year. Most of the G20 leaders attending the two-day summit in Indonesia have slammed the war in Ukraine, saying that it is hurting the global economy. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
In the United States, an Alabama congressman and former Donald Trump ally has said it would be a very bad mistake if Donald Trump was nominated by the Republican Party for the 2024 presidential campaign. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Alabama congressman and once zealous Donald Trump supporter Mo Brooks has a remarkable new stance on the political future of his former hero. It would be a bad mistake for the Republicans to have Donald Trump as their nominee in 2024, he said. The stark judgment from Mo Brooks was indicative of the deepening and brutal blame game among Republicans, which continued on Monday, 14th of November, nearly a week after the party failed to retake Congress in the midterm elections and a day before Donald Trump's expected announcement of a new presidential campaign. Speaking to AL.com, Mo Brooks, an Alabama congressman, added, "Donald Trump has proven himself to be dishonest, disloyal, incompetent, crude, and a lot of other things that alienate so many independents and Republicans. Even a candidate who campaigns from his basement can beat him." That was a reference to Joe Biden and his precautions against COVID-19 in the 2020 presidential election. Joe Biden won the race by more than 7 million votes and 306 to 232 in the Electoral College. Mo Brooks did not accept the result. On 6th of January 2021, he donned body armor and spoke to Donald Trump's supporters at a rally near the White House. Repeating Trump's lie about electoral fraud, Mo Brooks said, "Today is the day American patriots start taking down names and the mob then attacked the Capitol building, a riot now linked to 9 deaths, including suicides among law enforcement officers." The election subversion Brooks supported is under investigation by the House January 6 committee, the Department of Justice, and state authorities. But Brooks broke with Donald Trump earlier this year when the former president rescinded his endorsement for U.S. Senate because Brooks publicly urged him to stop relitigating 2020. Donald Trump's eventual endorsee in Alabama, Katie Britt, won a Senate seat. But elsewhere, last Tuesday, high-profile Trump-endorsed candidates failed, ensuring Democrats held on to the Senate and stayed on course to hold the Republicans to a tight House majority. Donald Trump is almost certain to announce his 2024 run at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida on Tuesday. But the fire from his own party keeps coming, the barrage widening to include shots at leaders in both houses of Congress. In the Senate, Marco Rubio of Florida, who retained his seat against the highly rated Democrat Val Demings, tweeted, "The Senate GOP leadership vote next week should be postponed." Josh Hawley of Missouri, a potential challenger to Donald Trump in 2024, added, "Exactly right. I don't know why Senate GOP would hold a leadership vote for the next Congress before this election is finished." That was a reference to the runoff vote for the last Senate seat to be decided in Georgia between the Trump-endorsed Herschel Walker, a controversial former NFL star, and the incumbent Democrat Raphael Warnock. Warnock won a tight vote last Tuesday but did not pass 50%, teeing up the runoff. Victories in Pennsylvania, the only Senate seat to flip so far, Arizona and Nevada mean the Democrats will control the Senate even if Raphael Warnock loses, thanks to the casting vote of Vice President Kamala Harris. The other Florida senator, Rick Scott, is under pressure after leading the Republican election effort. The party leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, is also feeling the heat. On Tuesday, Josh Holmes, a Republican operative who was formerly chief of staff to Mitch McConnell, told the Wall Street Journal the Senate campaign was run basically as a Rick Scott super PAC, where they didn't want or need to input any Republican senators whatsoever. That's a huge break from recent history, where members have been pretty intimately involved. Democrats seized on an 11-point plan to rescue America Scott issued earlier this year, in which the senator, widely thought to have presidential ambitions of his own, proposed that more Americans pay federal income tax and said Congress could sunset Social Security and Medicare within 5 years. The website of Business Insider has also covered the same story. Alabama Congressman Mo Brooks, who just 2 years ago was one of former President Donald Trump's most ardent congressional supporters, said in a recent interview that it will be a bad mistake for the Republican Party to nominate him as the party's 2024 presidential nominee, while also describing Donald Trump as dishonest and incompetent. While speaking with AL.com, Mo Brooks, who unsuccessfully sought the Republican nomination for Senate in Alabama this year and has said he will retire from politics after his term ends in January of 2023, sharply criticized Donald Trump following a midterm election cycle where GOP gains were muted and a conservative-led red wave never materialized on a national scale. It would be a bad mistake for the Republicans to have Donald Trump as their nominee in 2024. Donald Trump has proven himself to be dishonest, disloyal, incompetent, crude, and a lot of other things that alienate so many independents and Republicans, Mo Brooks told the publication. Even a candidate who campaigns from his basement can beat him, he added, taking a dig at President Joe Biden's cautionary approach to campaigning during the 2020 presidential election while the COVID-19 pandemic was at its peak. It's just the way it is. Mo Brooks, who has questioned the integrity of the 2020 presidential results, told AL.com that he was not fighting for Trump after a November 2020 contest, but had spoken up to ensure the security of elections. I did not fight for Donald Trump after the 2020 election, Brooks said. I fought for election integrity. Donald Trump just happened to be the beneficiary of it. After entering the 2022 Senate contest, he was endorsed by Donald Trump. However, after telling GOP rally attendees in August of 2021 that they should look to the future and not focus on the 2020 election, Donald Trump withdrew his endorsement and said his longtime ally had gone woke. Mo Brooks tried earnestly to win back Trump's endorsement, but the former president declined to back another candidate. In the May primary, Brooks came in second place behind attorney and former state chief of staff Katie Britt. But ahead of a June runoff election, which was triggered since no candidate exceeded 50% of the vote in the initial vote tally, Donald Trump threw his support behind Katie Britt. Mo Brooks went on to lose the runoff to Britt, who was easily elected last Tuesday in the Republican-heavy state. The congressman, during the AL.com interview, continued to criticize Donald Trump. He said, "Keep in mind 2016 when I said Trump was dishonest. You cannot trust a single word that he says, and I have never recanted that. No question, I am displeased with Donald Trump, but that does not change the truthfulness of what I say. I challenge anybody to make the argument that you can trust the word of Donald Trump," he said. When asked about candidates who could carry the GOP banner in 2024, Alabama Congressman Mo Brooks said, "Ron DeSantis or somebody like him would be an amenable pick, along with Senators Ted Cruz of Texas and Rand Paul of Kentucky."
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
The cultivation of an Islamic identity has been our topic. We want to, inside of the heart of our hearts, we want to be a proud Muslim that can identify with the deen, but there are barriers. And one of them I talked about yesterday was internalized Islamophobia. The second barrier that happens when we're trying to establish an Islamic identity is a lack of certainty. The cultivation of an Islamic identity has been our topic. We want to, inside of the heart of our hearts, we want to be a proud Muslim that can identify with the deen, but there are barriers. And one of them I talked about yesterday was internalized Islamophobia. The second barrier that happens when we're trying to establish an Islamic identity is a lack of certainty. And that's one thing that I want all of myself especially to understand, that the deen is a deen of harakat and a deen of movement. Not a deen to be complacent or to be stationary or to be static. No, you got to keep moving. You got to make sure your yesterday is a little bit worse than your today. And your tomorrow a little bit better than your today. The deen does not tell you just be okay and have spiritual complacency. A lot of us now stop and convince ourselves the amount that I do is not only enough, it's good enough. I don't see myself anywhere else but in heaven, inshallah. That's how good I think I am. Yeah. They have their manzil, their palaces already laid out in the hereafter. 18, 19-year-olds telling me I don't see God punishing me in the hereafter, Mulana. Allah, Himmat, MashaAllah. Give me that yaqeen. And it's good to have that sort of husnizan for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's great to have that great opinion of Him, but not to the point where you think, okay, I'm good now. I'm good. Because now what we do is, people like me, we look for ways to, what? To maximize my good and minimize my evil. And the deen says, do it opposite. The way that you hide your sins, hide your good deeds. Very hard to do. Hide your sins, right? We hide our faults, we hide our blemishes, we hide our sins, even our physical blemishes. We do our best to kind of, you know, put a band-aid, right? Put something on our face to hide it, all that. God says, do the exact same thing when you do anything good. Let me take care of your respect. You don't need to take it into your hands. I'll make sure that more people know about it than if you handled your own good deeds. Just have yaqeen and certainty in me, that's it. Removing doubt is extremely important. Now, I want to present to you a couple of more verses, and then I want to get to a discussion on perfection, because it is a very relative discussion. Yaqeen, certainty, removing doubt is a very relative discussion, and we'll get to that in a moment. Before that, let me present to you, you know, all of you know me enough to know that I'm not a doom and gloom Mulana, right? I'm not the scary, squeeze the grave, whipping in the grave Mulana. I'm not. I try not to be, at least. I try to be a little bit hopeful, a little bit happy-go-lucky, a little bit, you know, the deen is positive, God is love. To a certain extent, of course, there is hisab kitab, there is justice, of course there is, absolutely. This verse, however, is very important. Surah Al-A'raf, verse number 179. Understand the context of this verse. Okay, Al-A'raf 179. Allah now describes those individuals that He uses as the base of the creation of the hellfire. Let me say it one more time. These are not the people who are the Ahle Jahannam. It's a different group. These are people that Allah looked at and said, because of them, I'm creating Jahannam. Oh, that's a different situation altogether. It's like, oh my God. وَلَقَدْ ذَرَعْنَا لِجَهَنَّمَا كَثِيرًا مِنَ الْجِنِّ وَالْإِنْسِ. Very famous verse, but listen to it through the eyes of yaqeen and certainty. That from the majority of the men and the jinn who will be in the hellfire, they have three qualities. How many? How many? Thank you, thank you. لَهُمْ قُلُوبًا لَا يَفْقَهُونَ بِهَا. They had hearts. They didn't allow anything to penetrate inside that heart. Everything was surface level. Everything was fluffy. Everything was, okay, no, that's enough. You know, we'll keep the research and tahqiq and ijtihad for the ulama. I'm good where I am. وَلَهُمْ أَعْيُونٌ لَا يُبْصِرُونَ بِهَا. They have eyes. But they never saw anything. They looked everywhere. 20/20 vision. But they didn't have, you know, this basirat, this insight. لَهُمْ أَذَانٌ لَا يَسْمَعُونَ بِهَا. They had ears. They never listened to anything. They heard a lot. Never listened to anything. Ulaika kal an'am. They're like cattle. Look at the example. They're like cattle. Just walking around. Nothing affects them. Bal hum adhal ulaika humul ghafilun. In fact, they're worse than cattle. They are amongst the ghafilin, amongst those who are heedless. Now, interesting example of the cattle. Given this example before, I just want you to understand what Allah is trying to tell us here. Okay? Why does He use cattle and cows and an'am? Why not ankabut? Or why not anything else? It's very, very interesting. Sometimes when you see certain animals and you're driving your car and you're approaching the animal reacts. Birds fly away, the squirrel runs for its life, right? If you shoot, let's say, a gun and nearby there's a deer, he'll pop his head up, you know, freeze for a second and then take off. If you try to capture a bird, it'll go from branch to branch to branch to branch. But you do anything around a cow, he does nothing. He doesn't even move. You can drive past his head, you can shoot a gun, you can attempt to, you know, can moo in his ear, even try tipping him over. He'll fall over. He'll stay where he is. He doesn't do anything. His surroundings are going crazy. Bombs going off, car horns, 90 kilometers an hour by his head, an inch away from hitting him, he's busy grazing, eating his grass. Allah says individuals who live their life with ears, eyes, and heart, and nothing goes through for them, they're just like that. Living their life. Eat, sleep, work, repeat. Eat, sleep, work, repeat. لَهُمْ قُلُوبًا لَا يَفْقَهُونَ بِهَا يَفْقَهُونَ فِقْ. The actual meaning of fiqh is فَهَمِ عَمِيقٍ, is a deep meaning. He wants that depth to enter your hearts. Oh, I've seen some of these kids today. Oh my God, man, their research in certain fields and their PhDs, oh, incredible. In this very city, a couple of months ago, I got a message about hijab in the Quran. This one sister, incredible. I was so impressed. And she wanted to just understand hijab from the Quranic lens. She doesn't, she couldn't see the fact that these verses that the ulama mention about hijab is clearly showing us how to wear hijab today. And she had a PDF document ready. She had a Word document ready. Did her research. Please, Sayyid, you know, can you look over this document and let me know where am I wrong? And it was such a beautiful document. So well organized. So professional. Such deep research. And it was just inspiring for someone like me. That depth we need, because that depth is mawjood in the deen. It's there in the deen. It's a matter of someone like you and I pulling it out. Don't settle. Don't simply say, okay, you know what, I'm good where I am. The last time I read about God was in my grade 9 class in Dinyat, in Madrasa. And now I'm in my 30s. The constantly refresh a lot of the ilm. I'm getting there in a little bit. You know, these stories we hear, right? In the middle of the war of Siffin, there's a man who turns to Amir al-Mu'mineen and says, can you tell me about, you know, qada and qadar of Allah? Talking about God, tawheed. In the middle of the war, arrows flying, now enemies approaching. He's asking about a question about tawheed. And another man says, ask him after the war. Let's let the battle go through. Look at the response of the first imam. He stops the second companion, says, no, this is precisely why we're in this war to begin with. For questions like this, the deen is very deep, has all of your answers, but you have to go through your respective way of getting your answers from your questions.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حالي حكيم متين غفور
شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight.
Germany is facing the challenges of a harsh winter with seeing its inflation reach record levels amid a shortage in energy supplies. This country has recently been the scene of protest against the cost of living crisis and skyrocketing energy bills. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Tehran Times wrote, Germany has again been the scene of new protest against rising energy prices amid growing demands for more assistance from the government towards those with lower incomes as the frosty winter season coupled with a hike in fuel prices begins to bite. Organizers say tens of thousands of people have marched through the capital Berlin against the cost of living crisis and skyrocketing energy bills. The protesters are also demanding the government control food prices and increase taxes for the rich. Marching behind banners, one of which was decorated with the demand, redistribute, the demonstrators have heeded the call of left-wing organizations to protest against the soaring prices. Other banners said the current economic order puts profits over people's needs as price rises hit German household budgets as well as businesses. The country has lost its main source of energy after joining the Western sanctions regime against Russian energy exports, which cut all Russian gas supplies via the Nord Stream pipeline. Critics say the move backfired. Germany had relied on Russian gas for more than 50% of its imports last year. By September this year, the Western sanctions on Moscow saw maintenance issues on the Russian pipeline, which resulted in complete halt to the pumping of any gas to Germany. That, in turn, has taken away from Germans a cheap gas bill that many middle-class households had enjoyed for so many years. The demonstrations against energy prices have in some parts of country become a regular occurrence on a weekly basis. Protests recently took place in Berlin, Düsseldorf, Hannover, Stuttgart, Dresden, and Frankfurt am Main, with protesters holding signs bearing slogans on everything from lowering inflation to switching off nuclear power and more energy price subsidies for the poorer class. The government has already slashed its growth forecast for this year and predicts the economy will shrink further in 2023. It is forecasting 0.4 percentage points contraction in GDP next year and has sought to mitigate surging energy prices by imposing a partial cap on the price of gas and electricity that will come into force in 2023. Many of other mitigating measures in the EU's strongest economy, including subsidies for rail travel, have been forecast to end. Germany is essentially struggling to find alternative wholesale energy suppliers with its friendly ally, the US, charging astronomical prices for American liquefied natural gas. Recently, some German economic experts proposed raising taxes on those with higher wages to help households struggling with their energy bills, but the suggestion was almost immediately rejected by the country's finance ministry, raising several eyebrows. Berlin has suggested some gas suppliers are profiting from the fallout of the Russia-Ukraine crisis, which has sent global energy prices soaring and a shortage on the global market, in particular among the countries that are very dependent on gas consumption. The now more expensive gas prices have forced industry cutbacks and closures, and municipalities are cutting back with lower temperatures in swimming pools and street lights turned off. Households are urged to use less energy, but many will nevertheless face huge jumps in their utility bills, despite attempts by the government to offset the price surge for consumers and companies. With the hike in fuel prices to heat homes and a lack of other viable options, Germans are faced with two options this winter: either switch the central heating off or use firewood, as was the case in the Stone Age, and reports suggest that the latter is being taken into serious consideration as wood that can produce fire to heat homes has suddenly shot up in demand. As with every product on the market, with increased supply comes increased sale prices, which may be the case, but there are growing fears and anxiety among many that there will be no gas supplies at all this winter, hence the rush for firewood. The demand for firewood has hiked in such a way that reflects just how serious the energy crisis could be this winter. The gas shortage itself has raised pressure on firewood suppliers to hike production amid dramatically increased prices for the product. Germany's Federal Association of Firewood Trade and Production has said the average price of firewood has increased by about 30-40% at most dealers, or about 150 euros per bulk cubic meter. Suppliers also say they have raised their prices by about 40% for one store, about 1 cubic meter of firewood. According to Germany's Federal Statistical Office, in August 2022, the price of firewood and wood pellets rose 86%. The cost of some dealers' large pallets of firewood, about 360 pieces of beech wood, has doubled this year from about 200 to 400 euros, including delivery to their customers. In fact, demand has become so high that some suppliers stopped taking orders in July this year for the rest of 2022, while others are trying to arrange supplies and deliveries for the next winter 2023. Some farmers and wood suppliers near Munich have statements on their websites along the lines of, "Please don't call us, we are sold out." According to the German Environment Agency, wood made up 9.9% of the total energy consumption for private households in 2020, which includes households that may use wood to supplement other energy sources. Again, it's an option that the energy crisis has made more necessary to those who source it in the market. It is a difficult economic time for many countries across Europe as a result of the COVID crisis and Ukraine war. More and more vulnerable people, including single mothers and low-income families, are showing up at aid organizations for food assistance as they struggle to make ends meet. One small charity group, Die Arche, told some media outlets that the NGO supports more than 5,000 families from lower socioeconomic backgrounds and around 1,800 families in Berlin, 95% of whom are single mothers, in areas such as advice, food and leisure, and educational activities. Its spokesperson says that in the 2 decades he has been working in the city, he has never seen a situation as serious as this one. We now have parents telling us that they are unable to feed their children meals at lunchtimes and so have started skipping meals so they have something to give them for dinner. The spokesman added the charity, which has also seen a drop in private donations in recent months, is expecting to see the number of families coming increase in the month ahead. According to government figures released recently, inflation in Germany is at its highest level in more than 70 years and hit 10.4% in October. It's not just Germany facing the challenges of a harsh winter. Many nations in Europe have seen inflation reach record levels amid a shortage in energy supplies. Calls are growing louder for governments in Europe, where households are suffering the most, to find a peaceful solution to the crisis in Ukraine and end the war to save a continent that is on the brink.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith and Selective Duty, Monday the 6th of Ramadan, 1394, the 23rd of September, 1974. There is a well-known tradition from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, which appears at the beginning of the chapter on enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, Al-Amr Bil-Ma'ruf Wa-Nahi Anil-Munkar. In the book Al-Kafi, one of our most important works of hadith. There is also Al-Wafi by Fayd Kashani, which combines traditions from our major collections of hadith, and I believe the aforementioned tradition also appears at the beginning of its chapter on this topic. This tradition says that, as we have mentioned, there are people who pray and fast so long as it's easy and doesn't cost them anything, but who avoid the duty of enjoining good and forbidding evil because it is difficult and liable to cause them hardship or bring them harm. The Imam does not say these people are not believers or that they do not have faith. He does not say they are sinners or hypocrites. However, the Quran is clear about this. Those who are after their own interests and do not really want the religion in its totality, they are not believers.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
These are the people who, when they are in the right on an issue, go to the Prophet to seek his judgment. But when they are in the wrong, and they know that the Prophet will rule against them in his judgment, and they know that the Prophet will rule against them in his judgment, they do not go to him. The Quran asks, are they afraid? Are they in doubt? Have they some misgivings about the truth of this religion? Or do they have doubts or fear that Allah and his Apostle will be unjust to them? The Quran, Surah 24, verse 50. This is close to disbelief. Do they fear that Allah and his Messenger would mistreat them? In all issues, in all disputes, in all the ups and downs of daily life, a believing person is moral. They are not only moral when it suits them to be. As everyone knows, when Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan needed to, he brought pages of the Quran and had them raised on spears. When it suited him, he would talk about the Quran, prayer, and the religion. When he wanted to win over someone who was on Ali's side, he would even mention the virtues of the Commander of the Faithful. He would even shed crocodile tears as he recited these. You have heard this story countless times. Muawiyah was sitting. Abdullah ibn Abbas was sitting. Others were sitting also. He asked someone, "Oh, so and so, what do you know of Ali's merits?" They would ask, "Do you promise me safety?" He says, "Yes, you're safe." Then he began to praise Ali, and as he did, Muawiyah would begin to shed tears. When he needed to, he would speak of his love for Ali. When he needed to, he would portray himself as a devoted servant of Allah. When he was forced to, in order to govern the masses of Muslims, he would respect their feelings. He would not want to offend their sentiments. He would speak of things that the people cherish, that is the Quran and Islam.
You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.